on this episode of the C4SO podcast.
When somebody's done something hard, especially, you know, they've just put in a lot of hours, it was maybe risky. The outcomes were unknown. Maybe for them personally, it was a stretch. And just to even acknowledge, even if it didn't go well, that they did it, that they took chances.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's just, and you have to be careful about who you do this with, because not everybody wants to be honored or recognized in the context of bigger groups. So there's some sensitivity needed to that.
Hi, I'm Mickey Lowe.
Hi, I'm Bishop Todd. And welcome to the C4SO podcast.
Hey, everybody. Todd Hunter here. Glad to welcome you back to another series of C4SO podcasts. In this series, we're going to be thinking about practical ministry. You know, there's times in life where you just kind of wonder about something and it's conceptual or ideological or just interesting. And there are other times when you want to know something. You want to know how stuff works, how to get stuff done. And that's what we're going to cover in this series. First up is a friend and a delightful woman from Christchurch, Austin, Texas. Her name's Kim Polk. She's the executive director at Christchurch Austin. And today we have a fascinating conversation with her about what it means to manage staff and to do so in a way that is simultaneously effective and fruitful and ethical and relationally solid. I think you'll enjoy this conversation. Here you go.
Hey, Mickey Lowe, it's great to see you. Especially great to see you. I'm sure a lot of our listeners who are close to C4SO would know you guys just went through that big hurricane in Tampa. And so did I hear right? You literally just got your power back an hour ago.
Yes, the Lord knew. I had this interview. So he made a way. Yeah. It feels like my family was the last family in Tampa to receive power.
Oh,
like 95% of the power was restored last night. And so we were like, oh man, I hope we're next. And thankfully, here we are. So praise the Lord.
Yeah, it's so great to have you. Yeah,
so I'm grateful to be here. And today we're joined by our friend Kim Polk. Why don't you tell us first a little bit about yourself, Kim? We're so happy to have you. And
happy to be here.
Yeah, it's a gift to be with you. And we would like to just start by hearing a little bit about your story. Especially as we talk today about managing church staff and things like staff leadership. So give us an idea of how you got to where you are today.
Yeah. Well, I started my career in corporate America with a Fortune 500 company where I worked for 25 years. I had no idea that was in my future when I first started out as an English major. Yeah, and it was a communications role. So in marketing communications and an international company with a base in Austin. And it was a great career that offered me a lot of different experiences. I managed a team of content developers about the time that I was leaving. I held many different positions over that 25 years, but always in marketing communications. And the corporate landscape and communications changed a lot over those 25 years. When I first started, there was no social media. So that changes a lot with the way that you communicate and how you communicate. And it used to be white papers, and then it became, you know, more everything was expected to be a video snippet.
Right. Yeah.
And so that was a really great career. And about the midway point, I was really wondering what else I wanted to be doing. I was really drawn to ministry, always very involved with the church. So I've been at the church that I'm now staffed at for 18 years. Just came on staff about 2 years ago. And about halfway through my career, I was really contemplating going into ministry full time. But I felt like the Lord basically invited me to stay in corporate America. So my question wasn't a moral choice. It was more like, Lord, where's your favor? And I felt like it was in the corporate world where I stayed. But then in more recent years, I really started to begin to have that sort of itch, like I wanted to do something else and really give my time and talents and service to something I really cared about and a mission I really cared about. And that's how I was led down this path rather unexpectedly.
Hmm. Yeah. So, Kim, what is your exact role at Christ Church Austin?
So I am the executive director, and that means that I oversee operations, administration, and staff. And my goal is really to help the rector lead, guide, and oversee and develop all aspects of the church and her pursuit of mission and calling.
One of my very favorite leadership books of all time is Max DePree's Leadership as an Art. Did you ever see that by any chance?
I haven't read it, but I know who Max DePree is.
Yeah, so it's a lovely little book. It's not like your kind of normal leadership book. It's really uncannily beautiful, and if anybody's leading and hasn't seen it, you should get it. So that book has one of my very, very, very favorite leadership axioms from Max, which is the first job of leadership is to make meaning, and the second is to say thank you. And I think what Max was trying to get at there was, you know, anything we're doing in leadership is really relational, and therefore being aware of team and that sort of thing. I think that's what he means by thank you. But I want to highlight the first part of that, the importance of leadership in making meaning. And typically, you know, the way you do that is through purpose, you know, like it's the purpose of a corporation or the purpose of a school or a church or a hospital or whatever. And so, sorry to be book dropping here, but there was a book that came out a couple of years ago called First Ask Why. I forget who the author was, where, again, there was a whole book trying to help leaders see the importance of and be able to articulate things like meaning. Why do we exist? What's our purpose, et cetera? So I'd love for you to reflect on that a little bit, both from your history in the corporate world, but how you see you and the senior team at Christchurch Austin trying to make meaning and give vision and purpose today?
That's a great question. And so often we're driven by, you know, tactics, how we do things. And so it's always good to really see the big picture. Why am I here? What value am I bringing to the world? What am I going to get behind that I really care about? And so really, our vision and our values steer everything and give that directional guidance to everything else. And so in our church, we have a core set of values, as I'm sure a lot of churches do, and mission, that have been longstanding values and vision. And they have emerged, not just like, let's make these our core values and then live into them. We're already living into them. And then codified them into our values. So those things include generosity, hospitality, whole life discipleship, intentional worship, the city, you know. And so over the years, we can point to things that we've done that support those values or express those values, from the way that we do Sunday services to the way we do our programming and the way we have formational opportunities and things like that. And it's because there's so many different ways to so many different strategies and ways to execute that, but those values are longstanding. They'll never change. You know, like what I said about the technology change over the past, you know, several years when I was in corporate America, always about clear communication, but the way you communicate with the, with social media has changed, but those values never change, you know, to provide clarity, meaning, purpose, what you're about and that kind of thing. So, so it's those values that I think that are so timeless, and there are different ways that you're going to live into those values and in what you do and how you spend your time.
I love that you say that, Kim, because that's so true. I mean, I've even heard Bishop Todd say over and over again, like, churches are still being planted, but there are different methods now than there were, you know, what, 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know,
Mickey, you're dating me.
No, you have a rich experience, Bishop Todd.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's wisdom. It's wisdom. It's not age. Age is fine too, though. We need that. But you know, there are different ways of making the same things happen, the same values be, you know, integrated into what we do. And so, Kim, maybe like a practical question is, how do leaders communicate like a clear, agreed upon vision that sort of naturally sets direction for everyone? So, like, mm-hmm. as someone who leads a team or who's leading, you know, a particular ministry or whatever it may be, people who are working on staff, how does a leader use communication and whatever method it may be, communicate clearly those visions and those values that they're trying to live into?
Yeah. Well, there's different ways that we do that. There's the congregational communication, and then there's the staff communication. They're a little bit different, but I think we talk about our values. We talk about our why. Why are we endeavoring to do this particular project on our property to make it more beautiful and more communally oriented and a better place for our children to gather, because we value hospitality and whole life discipleship from young to old. And so we want to make spaces to welcome them. So we talk about the things that we're doing, whether it's service projects or mission opportunities, and we connect them back to our values and give that rationale, that why. Why are we offering coffee every Sunday morning, you know, expression of hospitality and then generosity, not just with our finances, but with our time and service. And so, you know, we have it on our website, but we'd also talk about it in the context of our announcements and our sermons and just connect it back to that bigger picture and just talk about the rationale and the whys. And with our staff, we often talk about when we're launching something or endeavoring to do something new, the value that we're trying to really promote and underscore and show. We also have values as staff, like leadership values, that are things that we embed in our culture and our staff culture. So generativity, risk-taking, relational, like these are just some examples of who we are. And so we try to express that in the ways that we spend our time together, what we talk about, and when we have a retreat together, making sure that we're focusing on those relational connections and celebrating when people take risks, you know, and recognizing some of the courage that requires and things like that. So those are just some examples of how we try to instill our values and live them out.
Yeah. No, that's super helpful. And I think that is really important, because you are reconnecting the things that you do and carry out as a church to the values that you uphold. And that kind of serves as a reminder of those values whenever you're launching something new or you're doing a new initiative and you're connecting it back to the value that drives that. And I think that's really great. And that's really helpful too, to kind of keep us oriented around what values we choose for our church. And that's super helpful. And kind of in the same vein of on the staff side, I'm curious, Kim, how do leaders help staff create their own objectives based on that vision and on direction? So maybe kind of like the tension between like coaching and guiding their work, but also leaving them to and like trusting your team to carry out duties and things like that. So how do leaders help staff in that regard?
Yeah, that's great. Well, we part of our yearly process is to do annual reviews, and we just added something recently that's planning. Because usually at the end of the year, it's just a kind of an evaluation tool, and not by that I don't mean like we're judging it necessarily, but feedback is good. It's a, you know, within the heart of evaluation is value. So where do we have value, and Where are they adding value? And so we get to reflect on that. And then when we're looking ahead, something that we've been talking about recently is, you know, how to incorporate vision. So there are goals, you know, first, that big picture. What are we looking to achieve? Like, what's the value that we want to bring? And then we have objectives. And that's, what are those ways to measure that? And then we have like a strategy. Okay, how can we get there? What are some ways to get there? And then there's the tactics of how that strategy gets played out. So there's some coaching involved in that. Like, let's think this way. Let's think big picture. And before we start rolling out all these different programs, let's ask the question, what are we looking to achieve? What's the opportunity? Or what's the gap, you know? Or, you know, what do we want to try that's new? And also looking in that process at the difference between, you know, trying to increase attendance by numbers. It's more than a numbers conversation, but measuring. How do we measure and notice change, you know? And so that is something that becomes part of the feedback loop later, you know? So I think it's just, you know, casting vision for them to think big picture that way in the context of the church's values, as well as our leadership values, and also trusting that they have gifts, and our staff are amazing, and they each have different perspectives, different gifts, different skills, different insight because of the communities of people that they're leading or shepherding.
Yeah.
And so really trusting in what God's given them and wanting to bring that to the whole staff, you know, and give them voice and encourage them in their ideas. And what we try to do as leaders is make sure that those align with the church's values, you know, like, so they have their different ideas and ways to express and try out new things. And this is the church's values. Bring those together and there's real synergy.
Yeah. So when I hear you talk, Kim, I'm picturing a cycle of teaching or community, but to use two T's, like teaching and trusting. Like there's an articulation of the whole vision and values. And then to your point, if somebody's leading children's ministry or youth or small groups or whatever, they have a knowledge of that work and how they're carrying it out, that they then are expected to take those basic vision and values and inculcate it where they are. And in that sense, you're trusting them to do that based on the quote teaching or articulating of the vision and values. But then, like you said, there's always a check-in loop. Am I hearing you right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and not just at the end of the year, but throughout. So everybody on staff has a supervisor that they're checking with pretty much weekly, and it's just you know, how are you doing? How is this going? What are your challenges? What are your celebrations? What are some, you know, some things that are on your mind or are heavy on you? How do you need support?
Yeah. Yeah. So one last thing before we get off this topic is, I was going to say this happens a lot to young leaders, but I don't think it's just age. I think it also can be temperament, that people can hear the kind of talk we're doing here and think, oh, delegation. Yeah, I kind of like the thought of that. I'm not clear exactly what it is and where the line is between, you know, me giving away too much authority or whatever. So talk for a minute about that classic leadership tension between intelligent, you know, well-planned delegation versus abdication, where a leader gets disconnected from the people and the events because they're not really delegating, they're abdicating. And I've never known anybody in my long career who did that on purpose. I suppose there has been one, but typically it happens inadvertently. So you've watched a lot of managers in your career, you've managed. Like, how would you help a young person or somebody who temperamentally just doesn't do well with delegation to work out what we've been talking about?
Delegation to me, I think, is wise and strategic, and you're looking for the people who are in the places of influence, have the role or the job description to fulfill on a particular goal or need or pastoral area, administrative area, whatever, and coaching them in terms of like, what are you working towards? Let's talk about that. Let's workshop, you know, what are the opportunities? What do you see? Really listening to them. I think abdicating is more of like, here's this thing that you need to do, or we have decided needs to be done, and you just do it and figure out. And there's like a loss of tracking and connection. Mm. And so I think with delegation, there's still that connectivity. There's still that sort of oversight. And ultimately that leader who's delegating owns responsibility, the ultimate responsibility for what's being asked, what we're being asked to carry out or do. And so there needs to be that connection of how's it going? What's not working well? What is working well? And staying connected. And then like working behind the scenes to make sure that staff member has clarity, yeah. But also has support and agency, mm-hmm. yes. you know, and gets to make some decisions or at least talk through why they think this way or another way.
So thinking about that second part of the Dupree quote, the second is saying thank you. The importance of who a leader is and the kind of community they create. And so, Kim, I'd love for you to talk to us about just creating a staff culture and even a vestry culture in which humility, compassion, the fruits of the spirit are prevalent and are baked into that culture. And I would also love to hear your experience with like a ministry setting, but also how different it could be from like a corporate setting, right? Because you have a background and experience in both. And so the values are obviously different. But kind of in general, I would just love to hear you talk about how we set that sort of culture with that posture of thankfulness.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I so agree with that. And giving gratitude and like when I think about thanking somebody for what they've done, even if it's expected and they've just done it well, like it gives them meaning to be
right.
Yeah,
the recipient of gratitude. And when I think of giving thanks, I think of very specific ways that we like to do that. And that's recognition, you know, like, and just, you know, when somebody's done something hard, especially, you know, they've just put in a lot of hours, it was maybe risky. The outcomes were unknown. Maybe for them personally, it was a stretch. And just to even acknowledge, even if it didn't go well, that they did it, that they took chances.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's just, and you have to be careful about who you do this with, because not everybody wants to be honored or recognized in the context of bigger groups. So there's some sensitivity needed to that. But a lot of people in our culture, in our staff culture, will often just recognize each other for the things that that we value, you know, like really want them to know, because it's true that we value them and we value what they're doing and how they're showing up and what chances they're taking and the extra effort that they're doing or getting curveballs and having to pivot. Mm. And, you know, so I just think that's that kind of recognition and honoring in a way that even when our staff leave, you know, like recognizing the contribution that they've made and how it's made some lasting impact, how they've shown up for other staff people personally, and you know, maybe gone outside of their role to offer support and things like that. Yeah. Just really recognizing those good things, like so fruits of the spirit kinds of actions, you know.
I love the way you linked this, Kim, to recognition, because when Mickey and I were talking about this in our prep session, we were thinking about how, well, first of all, let me back up and say, Dupree's one of those writers that every sentence is pregnant with all kinds of meaning. And that word thankful or thank you, the second or last job of leadership is to say thank you. I know what he means by that. is, like you said, provide that kind of recognition that suggests we're a team and we're doing this together. And what I like about it from a leadership point of view is that it also shows like humility, or like in your case, compassion, like saying to a young mom who just finished a project for you, you know, oh, thank you so much. And it comes out of a compassion that she was going above and beyond the call of duty. And Mickey and I were thinking about how this gets in actually to the fruit of the spirit, and how sort of impregnated in that little phrase, thank you, is the fruits of the spirit, love, joy, peace, patience. And I just think that little phrase of learning to say thank you is such a culture creator.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's actually like it, one of the things that we do on staff is we've done some retreats together. We have extended time together, and we'll just have a Barnabas, what we call a Barnabas moment, where we just get to encourage that staff member and say the things to them that this is how we see you. This is how you show up. You are gifted in these ways. And just, it's amazing what a blessing that is for not just the person who is receiving it, who's probably squirming, as they're receiving it, but it's fun for the staff to do. So there is like that blessing. Blessed is it, you know, what does that say? More blessed to give than to receive.
Yes,
and that's so true. It's got a gratitude has a generative effect.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. That's great
so
thought.
So Kim, I would love to hear what you've noticed in your experience, in managing in various settings. What have you noticed about the importance of emotional intelligence, as a leader and using spiritual discernment as you're leading your team, checking in on them? Can you tell us more about what your experience there has been, and if that's something that you like, have you just noticed that there should be this importance of utilizing emotional intelligence and leading?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I was in the corporate world, they were just starting to talk about emotional intelligence as I was on my way out a couple of years ago. And one of the biggest changes for me going from corporate world to full-time ministry is how relational this work is.
Yeah.
And the corporate world, it's relational in the sense that you're often working with people to get things done, sometimes from other cultures, backgrounds, all that, but you're working towards a thing. You're all rallied around a project that has a end goal or financial bottom line or something like that. Mm-hmm. In the church world, it's so relational,
right.
You know, and that is so true for our staff. And one of the things that we do, it's important for us to have time as a staff to build relationships. So we have two away retreats per year, one of which is just really for us to connect relationally, because it's important for us to be connected with each other and supportive of one another. And the way that we do our work, because it's so relational, one of the things that we do when we have our weekly staff meeting is we go around and do a two-word check-in. So before we talk about anything that's going on in the church or how this week went or what's coming up, it's just the question, how are you right now? You know, not this big existential question of how are you, but just right now, you know, and just welcome anything, because we, especially as sacramental people, Anglicans are embodied. And so our emotions, how we're doing physically, our physical body, and our spirit, like we're whole people. We're not just doers. We're human beings, not human doings. And so I think it's really important to recognize that. And also just helps us to be sensitive to one another. So we do those two-word check-ins, and sometimes it's really positive and sometimes it's negative, and we all have those experiences. It's always, you know, kind of up and down, different things going on. But that that's a point of connection, is just when we can share with each other just where we are.
Yeah.
That's so good.
So, Kim, recently I was at a think tank sort of thing with, it was a mix of scholars and a few practitioners, and which I would have won. And we were thinking about like pastoral theology, or like theology that would inform pastoral work, maybe is the way to talk about it. And one of the studies that we were alerted to came from Hartford, that kind of the title of it or the overarching theme was, what they learned in this study is that the vast majority of Christian leaders said, quote, "I am exhausted all the time." And I just know from me talking to, you know, I talk to pastors literally every day, usually more than one. And so I just know, if I look back over my long life and I think about the particular ways that people can be driven out of control with business today because of, like you said, social media and all that, how are you guys trying to harmonize at a big church? And I guess this would apply to any size church. How are you guys trying to harmonize, like, getting stuff done? There's stuff that actually needs to get done, right? Like, Sundays are relentless. They come around every week, and Mickey's got to have the band together and a song set list. And, you know, there's just...
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because that's like a live question for me, Kim. So please, like, share your wisdom, because we're all wondering.
Yeah. So how are you balancing that with that kind of burnout stuff that we're all aware of in the church? Mm-hmm. Like, there's stuff that's got to get done, but we don't want to be burning people out all the time.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, another one of the changes that I noticed when I moved from the corporate world to the ministry world is touches on this very thing. When I worked in the corporate world, there were people way above me that were the ones that were staying up at night because of a bottom line that needed to be met or things like that. And I, you know, I had my area and space that I had influence. And, but at the end of the day, it wasn't my thing. I could walk away from it. Mm-hmm. In ministry and in a place that I care deeply about, and the work that I care deeply about, the people I care deeply about, one of the challenges is how to carry this. The carrying of this is very different. And so this is an area that I'm continuing to learn and grow in. I think that having a good work-life balance is really essential. And having people that I trust, that I can process things with, and places that I can be that feel safe and restoring. So we encourage our staff to take vacation, take time off. And that's really important. And we also want to have fun together. Like, one of our leadership values is fun loving, like not taking ourselves too seriously. Cause this can be very serious.
Oh yeah.
Heavy work.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And we're not going to be able to respond to every need. The needs are always going to be greater. And so investing in ourselves and are really just cultivating a self-awareness, like, of when we're getting tired or when we're starting to show signs of burnout, you know, little things that start to irritate you that maybe didn't before, not sleeping so good, just things like that, just really cultivating that awareness and being able to make those adjustments when needed before they really start to bog you down. So just like things that everybody knows, but it helps to be reminded of: sleep, exercise, fellowship, you know, in places outside of our ministry context and work context that can be uplifting and restoring.
A famous quote by Dallas Willard is, "The only thing God gets out of our lives is the kind of person we become." And, you know, in the exercise of our leadership, Kim, what do you do to keep your heart aligned to that truth?
We don't always know. I don't always know what matters most. And I want to be faithful to the things right in front of me that I have clarity about. And always be in a learning posture, always be aware that I don't know everything. And it's a joy actually to just embrace that and to get to learn, to get to grow. As old as I feel like I am now, like that's one of my greatest joys, is that I still get to, I'm still learning, I'm still changing, I'm still being shaped, you know, and who we are, who I am, it does matter. I think what we do and what I do matters too. And so just being faithful with the things that are right before me, and acknowledging my shortcomings, but, you know, hopefully celebrating mine and others' victories, you know, and not always based on the outcomes, but based on the transformation that's happened.
Yeah.
It's so freeing.
And then very last here, Kim, how are you helping to train your team to do the same thing, to realize that, you know, Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth does speak. We could paraphrase for our work today, out of the abundance of the heart, the woman or man doth lead. So what are you guys doing at Christchurch these days to help not just staff, but volunteers, vestries, everybody to realize that super important, unspeakably important, innate connection between who we are as people, as leaders, and the way we lead and the kind of communities we lead?
Yeah, we think of ourselves as a both and church, you know, so like really have the value of, and I think you've heard Christine Warner, who leads Matthew 25 Initiative, say this, contemplative activism.
you know,
so we want our doings and the things that we put our energies into to flow from our being.
Yeah.
And so the being comes first, but it's not just to feel good, not just to, I'll say, because I feel guilty of this sometimes, staring at my belly button but it's being filled up to pour out, and that and being in that ever flowing of receiving and giving and receiving and giving. And sometimes those seasons change, and sometimes there's just a real dry time where a lot of filling needs to happen. And I think, you know, that's a value that we communicate. And so we don't want people to serve to exhaustion, whether they're staff or whether they're volunteers, and to be valued for just who they are, you know, and how they show up and what God's doing in them, and celebrating those things. And certainly we want to give them a place to serve, but that will come with joy.
When there's a
filling up, then it's natural for the pouring out to happen, I think.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, thank you, Kim. I mean, leadership has always been hard. It doesn't matter what age or era somebody lived in or was trying to lead in. Certainly, I know leaders today feel particular complexities around leadership. So thank you for sharing with us today and just giving our listeners a chance to sit in their car or ride their bike or be at the gym or whatever they're doing and think a bit about the connection of their own life to effective leadership. We really appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you, Kim.
Thanks so much for having me, and thanks for what you're doing. Love these podcasts.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the C4SO podcast. If you like what you heard, please feel free to share this episode and subscribe and leave a review. It helps us to get the word out. Thanks.